Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. My guest today, Toronto Raptors forward Serge Ibaka, one of the real pivotal players of this stretch run of the NBA season and then right into summer free agency, where he'll be one of the most coveted free agents on the market this summer. Toronto traded for Ibaka, made a deal with Orlando to really try to galvanize themselves in the Eastern Conference to close that gap with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I talked to Ibaka about the end in Oklahoma City, the final days of Ibaka, Kevin Durant, and Russell Westbrook.
Even when we was there, at some point, I know somebody had to leave. But I didn't expect that to happen that so quick and so soon. But at some point, I knew somebody had to leave.
I asked Serge about his really unique relationship with his young daughter, who moved to the United States to live with him in his final season in Oklahoma City, a young woman that he didn't know existed until just a few years ago, and how a father and a daughter build a bond, build a relationship, and then come to live together and become a family.
Yeah, it was kind of a little strange, a little bit. It's kind of funny. I was asking myself, she really do love me? Like, she like me? You know, she was happy. Actually, she's the one asked to come live with me. So she wouldn't want it to be with me.
Now, here's my conversation with Toronto's Serge Ibaka. Serge, how are you, man?
Man, I'm doing good. Can't complain, man. Can't complain.
Good to be here with you. We're in D.C., Raptors playing the Wizards on Friday night. Like, you know, you spent your whole career in Oklahoma City and then a few months in Orlando. Do you wake up in the morning and have to remember now, like, I play for the Toronto Raptors? Does it take some getting used to when you've all of a sudden when you change teams, right, you know, midseason this year and after being in a place only, you know, really a couple months?
Yeah, sometime. You know, when you wake up, you still have to think about, but I do the best I can, you know, really to understand, you know, I try to focus so hard to understand the situation is the business, just to focus right now. And I'm here in Orlando. I'm here in Toronto, you know. So, yeah, I'm trying to focus on that.
When you think of the time in Orlando, does it almost now just feel like it was a blip? It just was like you'll just remember it as like just a very short time in your career.
Yes, it was, you know. Unfortunately, it was very short time. I wish, you know, things could be better. I wish, you know, we could do better like a team. But things didn't work the way we all was hoping. So, you know, things change now. I'm in Toronto now. And I'm trying to do my best I can to, you know, stay focused here and finish the season and strong and to be ready for the playoff.
Serge, when you come to Toronto, I mean, you and Masai have, I think he told me the first time he saw you play, he was coaching maybe like a junior team in the Congo in maybe 2006, 2005, 2006. Did you know who he was then?
No. I didn't know who he was and nothing about, even about NBA, nothing.
Would it have seemed, when you were a kid growing up in the Congo, mm-hmm. would it have seemed, you knew of African players in the NBA, you knew of Hakeem Olajuwon
and others? I know, Hakeem and Mutombo.
And Mutombo?
Yeah.
Would you have ever imagined there would be an African general manager?
Masai?
Yeah.
You know, like, actually, no, because when I got here in NBA, I didn't know, like, we got an African general manager here in NBA. And I don't remember one day I was talking with one of my people, like, you know, we talk about African players, African league, and then, you know, if there's any African coaches, you know, and then he told me, oh yeah, he's an African general manager here in NBA. I said, who? And then he told me the name, Masai. That time he was Denver.
Right.
You know, I said, oh, okay. You know, that's how I found out about him,
Serge, coming into Toronto now, we'll get to Orlando a little bit, but when the trade happened, I texted Kyle Lowry and I said, what do you think of how Serge fits? And he said, it's great. I love it. But I want Ibaka back. I want Ibaka. What do you think he means by that? What do you think the player who is, you know, second, third team all defensive player in the NBA in Oklahoma City, do you sense that from them, they really want to see that dominant defensive rebounding player there?
Yeah. For a point guard, I totally understand that, you know, because when you're a point guard, you want to have your big get your back. You want to make sure you got somebody in paint who you trust, you know, or where you can go pushing the ball and you know you got somebody. So, like, for him, I really understand that. And, but, you know, in general for basketball, you know, and compared to Oklahoma back in the day when I was one of the top three defenders in the league, and anyway, now, you know, it be kind of changed a little bit, you know, even that's since before I left OKC. And then, and that moment, I was playing a little bit of four and five. Yeah. You know, so when I play in five, I have opportunity to stay in the paint, to protect and basket. And with the way the game is going right now, you know, the way the game is going right now, you got a lot of small power for now.
Right.
Teams playing small ball. You know, and before I leave in Oklahoma, when we got Steve Adams, and I was becoming to play straight four, and it was good for the team. And in that moment, and the coach asked me to do, because it was kind of and even in the defense and offense, because we had Steve Adams,
right?
So to give Steve a little space, meaning to play in the five. And that's where things started to change a little bit, you know, and because I'm starting getting a little away from basket. It's not something like I ask to or I want to, you know, but it's the basketball and it was good for the team. I had to do it, you know. And, you know, I'm so thankful now because with the Raptors, I'm playing a couple minutes at the five, at the four. I like that. It's bringing me back my mentality, that aggressiveness, mentality, defense to protect the paint, you know?
When you first got into the league, when you think back to the kind of players you had to defend and where you had to defend them on the floor, fours and fives, how much different is it from then until now?
A big difference. When I got in the league, the only path I was worried, like if I go block shot, I cannot leave him open, it was Dirk Nowitzki. And let me see, Dirk and who? It was not a lot. Like the only Dirk Nowitzki was the guy where, you know, when we was playing against them, we scouting the team. Serge, this tonight you cannot go block shot. You know, tonight you cannot block shot because you really can make shot. So, back in the day, they were not the game changed now. You know, you got powerful. Like they just straight triple line. They shoot triple line. They all the time, they spend all the time on triple line and they really can make shot, you know. So it's really, and even the coaches, they understand now. Like the coaches, when we play against a Serge Ibaka team, you cannot put your power forward on a corner because I'm going to be the helper, you know. Now they're putting the power forward on top where the helper is not really me. He has to come from the guys defending the ball in the corner, you know. So the game's really kind of changed a bit, a lot.
You haven't had a chance to play with Kyle Lowry in Toronto yet, playing with Kyle and DeMar DeRozan together. Do you think it's going to feel a lot like what it was to play with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, learning to play off of two, you know, dominant scoring perimeter players? Do you see a similarity for your role here versus what it was like then?
Yes. You know, even I know Kyle and DeMar's there. They were different players, you know, two different players compared to Kevin and Russell. But the truth is, they feel like that, you know, they feel like that.
When you guys were all together in Oklahoma City before the James Harden trade, when you got to the finals against Miami, and you think of that team of Russell, Kevin, James, you, at the time, Reggie Jackson said this to me once, that he goes, I just felt like I was going to be along for this team that was going to win 5 or 6 championships, that we were going to win forever. Mm-hmm. Is that what it felt like as a young player with that group of talent?
Yes, we was believe we was we are we have a lot of confidence. Like, man, we so young, and we're gonna win. We're gonna win a couple, more than 2 or 3. Even after we lost the final against Miami, and we told ourselves, you know what, we got time. We're still young, and we're gonna keep getting better and better every year.
When you think about now, they traded James at the time. Mm-hmm. It was based largely on money. They couldn't come to a contract extension. Do you think that when now you look back and you go, James, Russell, and Kevin are all MVP. They might be 1, 2, 3 in the MVP. Well, maybe not Kevin now because of the injury. But could it have gone on? Do you think that guys would have wanted to be a star of their own? Would James have accepted, do you think, going on, or Russell, or the three of them? Was there enough to share, or even you? Could it have kept going? Would the group have sacrificed enough? Or do you think that guys were looking at that point that they would want their own teams? How do you think it would have played out?
Well, that's a good question, because at that moment we was young, right? So we was young, but at some point everybody was growing up, everybody started getting becoming mature, understand the game, understand the business, and that make kind of could change a little bit things. You know, that may could change a little thing. I'm not saying 100%, I'm not sure, but that may could change a little bit of things. But one of the things about James, and one thing I always say about James is, if James was staying with the OKC at that moment with us, he didn't get traded, he will not be the James he is right now. He will not.
Why not?
Because he will not. He was coming from the bench, and you got player like Russell and Kevin Durant, the same team. He will still have effect. He will still be a good player. No, but not a great player like he's one now. You know, because he's only one ball.
Right.
Only one ball.
People talk about who were around your team, how hard that team practiced, how hard you guys all worked individually mm-hmm. on your games. When you think back to that time, none of you guys became the players you did without incredible belief, incredible work. What do you remember about the environment around that team and as young players, and how hungry
that group was? That's one of the things. We was hungry. You know, you got guys like Kevin and Russell. When you see guys like Kevin and Russell, they work hard every day. You have to work hard too. You know, you have to work hard too. So that's one of the good things, where, you know, everybody, we was young and hungry, and you know, we had high pride too. So nobody wanna. It was like almost fight. We tried to fight against each other every day. I don't mean fight like this, but you know, everybody tried to prove like I can do something. You know, I can do something. So that's it. Make everybody to keep working, because we are so young and a lot of talent. So that's one of the great thing. You know, and I got, you know, I always say I feel blessed to be in that part of the group, because you know, it was this. Especially for me, myself, coming from Congo, you know, where, you know, basketball is totally different than here, and then in Spain, and it was a great experience.
When you think to the last season and being up 3-1 in that, do you think for your group it will be hard to ever get over that series?
Of course, and it's going to be hard. It's something. Personally, I'm never gonna forget it. And every time when people bring that to me, I was like, please, let's just stop it. It's like, you know, it's like, is this hitting my heart inside? Like, let's just stop talk about it. You know, because every time people bring it to me, I was like, let's just stop it. Mm. You know, yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, one of those things in my life, I will never forget
it. When you walked off the court after game 7.
Yeah.
You didn't know you'd be traded. You didn't know Kevin would leave in free agency.
Yeah.
But I think you had questions about your future there, what your role was. Did it feel like the end when you walked in the locker room, or did you think this can go on? What was your thought about, is this the end of something?
At the moment, you know, with the pain, you know, of losing, at the moment, yes, I felt that a little bit at the moment. Like, oh, man, like, wow. We were almost the one game away for the final. After a couple of years of injury, you know, now finally everybody was together. And then we was one game away from the final, and then we couldn't make that. Like, man, it's like, oh, man, all the hard work, all the work we did put to get there, and then we didn't make it. You know, and that, those kind of feelings make you like, man, I don't know if it's, and we're gonna, next year it's gonna happen again, because, you know, playing against the Golden State, you get them 3-1. Oh, I was like, man, I don't know. I don't know if it's, that thing is gonna work again, you know, like, and like you say, at the moment, in knowing Kevin, knowing the possibility Kevin Durant may leave because the free agency is coming next year, he's a free agent. So all those things, all those thoughts in mind is like, man, I don't know.
Your role at the end in Oklahoma City, your last year, was it harder for you to accept just being the third guy, not getting the offensive role you would have hoped to? Because you're walking that line of you're trying to fit into a team and do what they want you to do to win. Yeah. And you've got your own career about your own free agency coming up and how you, the kind of career you want to have in the league. Was the last year where you struggled maybe with that more about what might be best for me in the long run versus what they keep asking of me here?
Yeah. You know, it's, those things are tough. People outside don't understand. Oh, why Serge Ibaka? Now he just won't leave. But you know, before I got that, I'm going to say, you know, I, all those things, when, you know, all those things, those moments, it really make, it really helped me. It really make me the player I'm one now. And, man, you know, the hard part is people outside, the fans, the, you know, and the media, and when this, what they, when they were saying, Serge Ibaka, you know, why is all now he's shooting all, always shooting threes? You know, he never developed his post games, and he's out now. He's not blocking, he blocked no shot no more. All those things, blah, blah, blah. You know, even I'm tough mentally, you know, even I'm tough mentally, and I wasn't really, I wanted to block all those things and just stay focused on basketball. So I had to do what I can do. But at some point, it was really, it was kind of affecting me a little bit. You know, and like last year, you know, it was affecting me a little bit because, you know, like you say, my role started to change a lot a bit, especially when we got a new coach. My role started to change a little bit because, you know, and then for, of course, I could not say no because it was best, better for the team, you know, for me, especially outside, be outside, shooting threes, you know, because before I used to run down the paint or go for a first rebound. And, you know, and coach start asking me to run outside the triple line to open Russell and Kevin to attack the basket. So, you know, it was, you know, for me, it was kind of like, man, now I'm just, I had to just walk on my trees and I catch a shot now because that's the only time I'm going to have ball or stuff like that. And then for the team, it was good. And then at the moment, Steve Adams, he was still getting better. And they was playing straight and five, and I'm playing straight on four. You know, some coach never try at the point sometime to put me at four, at five for a little bit. So I was like, man, now I'm really straight four now. You know, like, you know, even sometimes I like to play five where I can have dirty basket, you know, dirty work and offense rebound, tip up or roll, dunk, like, stuff like that. And it just, you know, everything was starting to change a lot. You know, everything starting to change. So I say, you know what? I have to take what they give me and work on it and try to just to be better, you know, better in what I can do, what I can bring for the team. But even that, you know, and personally, I was like, it's kind of like, that's not what I want.
In Oklahoma City at the end, listen, I don't believe you asked to be traded, but I think you weren't ready necessarily to commit that, hey, I'm going to re-sign long-term. You didn't know what you wanted. You were a year away from free agency.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that Sam made the decision to trade you, or based on your conversations with him and your agent Andy Miller's conversations with the team, did you think, okay, I think this is what they're going to do now?
Well, I was surprised when he traded, and then after that, I just took time to think. I guess I say, yeah, you know, he's not really trusting me no more. You know, he's not really, you know, he's. They don't really believe in me no more, you know, like, you know, I used to, so they were really, and then I just told myself, you know, now it just makes sense, you know, now it's time for me to move on, you know, to focus on my next life, because, it was the hand of the hair, you know, the hand of the hair.
Right.
So, and then, I understand then, you know, I was starting to get older and they got young Steve who was doing those kind of work I was doing when I was young too.
Right.
So it just make me think like, you know what, it's just time for me to go.
When you look at them now and think back of Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, that only Russell is left. Is that hard to imagine sometimes that only out of that group, there's only Russell left there?
You know, this is basketball. It's business. And when I think about me, I believe, you know, I believe in God. So the only one person is perfect. The only thing is never going to change. It's God, you know. So, you know, even when we was there, at some point, I know somebody had to leave. Somebody had to leave. At some point, somebody had to leave, you know. And but I didn't expect that to happen that so quick and so soon. But at some point, I knew somebody had to leave, you know.
Were you surprised Kevin left? Or do you look back and go, looking back on it, I see it better now than maybe I did even then?
Well, I got just confused. It kind of confused me when Kevin left. But, you know, because I was thinking maybe Kevin is going to leave. That's what I was thinking. Kevin is going to leave. When I was thinking, like, I'm going to be here. You know, I was thinking the first person I'm going to leave is Kevin.
Your free agency, I think there was a thought he would opt in, that he would stay for one more year.
Okay,
right? Yeah. And then you'd line up your free agencies together.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like, if Kevin is going to stay, he's going to stay one more year, because after we lose 3-1, you know, he's going to stay one more year so we can try one more time. Or he's going to leave. If you leave, but I didn't expect, you know, I didn't think like, okay, I'm going to leave first and then Kevin leave after. You know, and after I got traded, I was thinking like, okay, I got traded, Kevin going to stay. You know, because I was thinking maybe Kevin may be happy. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying happy, but you know, maybe Kevin, you know, they try to get new players or, you know, whatever, they try to, to tell Kevin, like, we're going to get new players so they can try again when I left. But then I kind of get surprised when he left too. I was like, okay, you know. But, and I'm happy for him, man. You know, I'm happy because I spoke to him last time. He said he's happy. You know, if he's happy, you know, I know it's tough for the OKC fans to understand that. But hey, man, this game right here we play, you know, when we're going to start getting 36, 37, 38, you know, it's going to be over, man. You know, and this one thing, I'm, you know, with more years, I'm still learning, like, man, you have to just enjoy the opportunity right now.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. Find your voice.
Guys, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from, and we all know that there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal. And no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients, all of it right to your door. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients, and it can all be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/woj. Think about that. That's 3 free meals just by typing in my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/woj, W-O-J. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our visit with Serge Ibaka. Your last year in Oklahoma City, your daughter came to live with you for the first time. You know, we did a piece on it on the Vertical last year with Chris Mannix, and that you were not aware of her. Essentially, your family had not made you aware that she existed.
Yeah.
That they didn't want you to come back to a war-torn country. They wanted you to sort of stay out on your keep pursuing your basketball career. And then your father, I think, made you aware of her, and you immediately connected with her, built a relationship. And all of a sudden now, here you were in Oklahoma City last year with a pre-teenage daughter, you and her. What did that do for your life? How did that change your life and how you viewed everything in the world?
Yeah, it changed my life a big time way. And in a good way, it really changed my life. And, you know, like you say, now I still think differently. And even in the basketball side and off the court, I just see things differently. And I'm telling you, it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. Like, sometimes we get scared a little bit, you know. Sometimes, like, man, no, it's a beautiful thing. Even sometimes get hard. It's a little harder. Sometimes it can get hard. But, and it's hard in a good way. That's the good thing about, you know.
How do you start to build a relationship? You're her father, mm-hmm. but you didn't know her. And yeah. How do you, like, in your mind, you say, where do I begin with a little girl? Where do I start with building a relationship with her, so it starts to feel like father-daughter, not just two strangers?
Yeah, one thing I told you, I decided her to come live with me. And because at that moment, I was thinking like, okay, what I can do? And, you know, with my people, my agents in Spain, you know, my friend, you know, we start talking about. So, you know, I told them, okay, it's my last, you know, I'm 2 years away to be a free agent. I had to focus on basketball, but what I have to do, you know, with my daughter, can't just I let her stay with her mom, or, you know, and just wait, maybe, you know, after 2 more years, she can come live with me when she get a little older or what, you know, my friend, they told me, yeah, we think it's a good idea, you know, let her stay with you, with her mom, you know. And maybe when she get a little older, because, you know, you live by yourself. So I think you're not used to. So things can be hard for you. So just let her stay with her mom. You know, then after a couple of years, she can come. I said, I want to think about. Then I start thinking about, you know, I decide myself, you know what? She's a little girl right now. She's growing up so fast. And I think it's important for me right now to start to build connection. Relationship with her right now, you know. So, you know, I don't want to be this kind of dad. One day she grew up and then she's gonna tell me, "You never be there when I needed you, or you never be there for me." You know, I said, "I don't want that. I don't want that in my daughter. I don't want that in my life." Or, you know, so I decided. I said, "You know what? I'm gonna make her come this year to live with me, and I'm gonna make sure, you know, we build her." This connection, our relationship together, and then from that we see how things go, and then it worked out well, because and right now she's like my friend, my best friend now, you know, and it's just a beautiful thing, man. That thing really changed your life.
What do you imagine it was like? I would imagine you probably had to put yourself in her shoes a lot. Mm-hmm. You came to this country, you left the Congo at 17 years old. You went to France. You went to Spain as a professional and then to the NBA. It was one thing for you to show up in Oklahoma City as a, you know, a man or certainly a young man to move from Africa to Oklahoma City, yeah, with a father she didn't really know very well. What did you imagine it was like for her? Was it overwhelming for her at the beginning?
Yeah, it was kind of a little strange, a little bit. You know, kind of like, okay, and yeah, you know, and I want to just ask myself, you know, it's kind of funny. I was asking myself, she really do love me? Like, she like me? Like, she really, you know, really, you know, I ask myself those kind of questions, because it's my first time to being dad, you know, and like, okay, you know, I'm asking myself, if she's really happy to be here with me, you know, how, you know, leaving her mom to come here be with me and she knowing, you know, but, you know, one of the good things, she's so smart and she pick up things so easier, understand things so easier, you know, and she, you know, she was happy. Actually, she's the one tried to come live with me, mm-hmm. You know, so she wouldn't want it to be with me.
She started the school year in Orlando. Yeah. You're going to let her finish in Orlando.
Yeah.
And then if you're in Toronto next year or if you're somewhere else, then she'll come.
Yeah,
with you.
Because I didn't want to take her off from school this year because she's doing so great and she's doing so well. And then, you know, and I feel like I didn't want to, you know, move her again because she was Oklahoma. She come from Congo to Oklahoma for 1 year, then Orlando, and then move her again. You know, she really was missing her friends in Orlando and Oklahoma. And then now she have friends in Orlando, and then, you know, they moved there. After a couple of months, I didn't want to do that for her. And that's why.
And is it for you now, you finally have, as if you'll be an unrestricted free agent this summer, and you get now to make a decision about where you want to play and where you want to live.
Yeah.
How much of it is based on, you've got a great situation here in Toronto, and there's a really good chance, you know, Masai traded for you with the idea that they would re-sign you, and I think you're hopeful all that works out. But how much of that decision is you look at her and say, what's a great environment for her? What's the best place for her now?
Exactly. That's one of the things, you know. Even that's one of the things, like having her, like I say, changed me a lot. That's one of the things. Well, now, even before I'm – well, now, before I make any decisions, I have to think, I want to think about her. I have to make her in my schedule. I have to make her in my plan. I have to make her and my decision before I make to think what is good for her. You know, what is good for her? Where, you know, I'm just going to say, like, you know what? I'm going to go anywhere I want because I love the place or I love the team. Or no, I'll make sure what is good for her too. You know, yes. And so it's going to be one of those decisions I have to make for her.
Your childhood was very different than what hers has become. You grew up in poverty. You grew up 15th of 18 children. Your dad spent several years as a political prisoner in the war, and you lost your mom. When you think back to the kid who you started to build this reputation playing on junior national teams and national teams, and then you turn professional and you move to France, Spain, when you look back at that kid, who you were then, do you wonder sometimes where you had the courage to sort of navigate all of that, move away to Europe as a kid? You didn't have a lot of formal schooling. When you look back at it, you say, wow, how did I get here?
Okay, with God, learning, and now I'm more mature, and I understand things, and with God, this one thing I know with God, anything is possible. Anything is possible with God. And that's one of the things, since I was in Congo. And I was a believer. It wasn't my heart. I know with him, anything is possible. You know, and because I know with him, everything is possible. When I sit down and think about all my past, everything I get through to come here, I say, you know what, with him, anything is possible. You know, so that's one of the things, you know, and I always keep reminding myself so I can keep going. I can keep pushing, you know, and even a moment when I was in Congo when things didn't go away the way I want to, but I always never lose my faith to believe with him, everything's possible. And, you know, I always say he chose me for a reason, man. He chose me for a reason. It's no mistake I'm here.
The poverty that you grew up with in Africa, what, for people who don't understand, what do you think the difference is, if there is a difference, between growing up in poverty and lack of educational opportunity that was there in the Congo and Africa versus what somebody who grows up in poverty in the United States or Canada, is it different? Is it dramatically different?
You know, personally, I don't know here. You know, I'm not gonna judge or compare things here because, you know, in the end of the day, and it's all struggle. You know, having nothing in Africa or having nothing here in the States to me is hard. You know, it's hard. So, and I don't know how hard it is here. You know, so most people are here. So, I'm not gonna judge. I'm not gonna compare things. But the one thing I know. And where I come from is hard. when I come from, the one thing I know is hard. You know, and you have to be a warrior to really, you know, stand up. And you know what? I'm gonna do something. And you have to believe in that. And something nobody will believe. Even family, even your parents, nobody will believe about that. Nobody.
When you think of your hardest days growing up as a kid,
yeah,
what were they like? What made them the hardest days?
What made them hard days? Listen, one of the hard days, it was on a Christmas, one day in a Christmas. You know, on a Christmas in Africa, and when it's a Christmas, kids, you know, they go with their parents, they go shop stuff, they go shop clothes, toys, you know, all those things, and it's not like, you know, different in Africa, like Christmas is for kids. So they dress nice, they got toys, they got candies, ice cream, they go take pictures outside, and, you know, they got food. So I remember that day on Christmas, I didn't have any food, any clothes, nothing. So I sit down the street and I sit down the street watching, you know, all, you know, kids, all the kids, all my friends with their parents walking, they wear nice clothes and I didn't have nothing, you know, and I started crying. Then I was young. I took a pill just to go sleep so I can just, the day came past, you know, and, one of those things, man, every time I think about that, man, it's like, wow, God is great, you know, and one of those things helped me to be the person I'm now.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Hey, Serge, sit tight for a minute so I can tell my listeners about SeatGeek. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it, too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it often because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to bamboozle you with big fees on the checkout page. Now listen closely to this next part because it's real important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket, and all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. Easy enough. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So please support SeatGeek like they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J, today.
This is the Vertical Podcast with WOJ.
Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports the Vertical Podcast with WOJ. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial info to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. What gave you hope? You had to have hope,
yeah,
to get to imagine the life that you have, imagine the opportunities. What would give you hope? Was it like a poster? Was it a... like, you knew who Akeem was, you knew who Dikembe was, you grew, you were becoming a basketball player that people were starting to take notice of. Was it as simple as that?
No.
Was hope, or there was something else?
First, I hope I always believe in God, you know, and I always believe, and I was having feeling in my heart, and he's not gonna let me down. He's not gonna let me down. And then one of my hope, I had Kevin Garnett posters my home, and then I remember the day I buy it, I didn't know really exactly who he is, because at that moment I was not watching. I didn't know about NBA. I was not watching NBA, you know. And the fact I was so in love with basketball, so I want to try to buy anything, you know. I want to buy anything if it's about basketball, right? So I decided, okay, you know what? I'm gonna go buy a poster of this for basketball, and to put in my home. And I buy that Kevin Garnett poster, the one when he was in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, that poster, he screamed, he beat his chest like that. And just after seeing that posters, I just feel something in my body, man. Like, this gives just something like energy, something like, I just want to scream at myself to like a poster, but it's just a poster, you know? And so every time I put that poster in my bed, like in my bed, like up, like my bedroom. So every time before I go to bed, when I wake up, I was seeing that poster. So it was, that poster was the, like, that picture was in my mind. Like, everywhere I go in the morning, when I go play basketball, I come back, that picture was my mind. And sometimes I just sit down, I'm just watching that pistol, man. Someday I just sit down watching that picture. I'm starting to visioning myself, mm-hmm. like an NBA player too, like screaming like him, stuff like that.
The first time you played against KG in the NBA, you're standing at the circle for the jump ball.
Yeah.
And you look at him. Are you thinking about that poster? Are you like, hey, the poster moves?
Yeah. The first time I was playing with him, I was like, oh wow, I'm playing against him. You know, like I play against him, like, oh wow. You know, like, I just like, and I told myself, I made it. You know, like, I made it, like, after, you know, we was in the car, I just told myself, yeah, you made it.
That was your rookie year.
Yeah, that's
my rookie year. Was that the first moment that it felt real?
Yes, I feel like I made it, you know.
Your foundation, Serge, that you've done a lot in the Congo, and whether it's education, hospitals, I think for you a bigger part of it is not so much, yeah, it's great that you could help kids get an opportunity to maybe play basketball, use basketball or soccer, use sports as a vehicle to get an education. When you were coming out of there, was the opportunity for an education not really there? Like, do these kids now have a better opportunity to be able to go to school and do that than maybe was even there for you, you know, less than, you know, 12, 13 years ago?
Listen, I always do tell those kids, you guys are so blessed. Right now, since I got an NBA, I'm not gonna talk about what I'll be doing back home. Since I got an NBA, we got NBA junior in Africa now. We got NBA junior, and what we got also? Yeah, we got NBA junior right now. Mm-hmm. We got NBA academies in Senegal right now.
Yeah, the academies, yeah.
You know, and we got a couple African players who play one on a league, and every summer they go back home, they do their camps. You know, like Bismack do, and Luke Bamute, all these players, you know. And then they got opportunity, you know, they can watch NBA now, you know. And they play with, you know, nice shoes, all the things. They, you know, they got free jersey, free shoes. When I start to play, oh man, when I start to play, like I say, it was not. Who care if you play basketball? You go nowhere. That's how the people mentality. Who care if you play basketball? Like, who care? Nobody care if you play basketball. Even your parents, like, you waste your, just go to school, man. Don't waste your time. You know. But you know what? Now, even everybody, even rich people, now they want their kids. Since I got an NBA, mm-hmm. where I come from, since I got an NBA, I heard even rich people, they want their kids to play basketball now. That's how amazing it is. That's how I always say, God choose me for a reason. Even rich people, that's what I heard, like, everybody in my neighborhood, when I grew up, it was soccer.
Right.
So, but just forget about basketball, man. Basketball go nowhere. We never had a professional basketball player. That's what I'm saying. Congo, Brazzaville, not GRC, because GRC, they have Mutombo Dikembe. That's where my mom come from. But I'm saying where I grew up, where I was born, when I grew up. So basketball was like, man, just, it was the time, man. It was the time now. Just get out and forget. It was the time. But now, all my neighborhood, it turned, every kid, every parent want their kid to play basketball. Oh, man. Yes. Yeah. So, and then one of the things I be telling them, I told them, you got blessed. You are so blessed because when I start playing basketball, I was playing basketball with no shoes on the ground, like no shoes. It was like 90, 95 degree outside. You play with no shoes. You got no, sometimes we play basketball with soccer ball.
Right.
Ball, you play basketball with that because you don't have basketball ball. And when I was playing in Congo, I never had basketball. I never owned a basketball. Like a basketball, I never owned one. I didn't have money to pay. I always use friends' basketball or go somewhere. I never owned my own. I never owned my own. And those kids were now, I always tell them, you guys are so blessed now. Like a lot of those kids, they be going in South Africa for all those NBA camps, NBA juniors, and
they get gear.
Get gear, jersey, shoes. Most of them, they're coming here, they're going to Spain, they're going to the United States. I'm like, you guys are so blessed, man. You know, but it's all, you know, it's life, man. You know, even before we got here in the NBA, we have people who be here, who make everything ready for us to come here to start enjoying the NBA. You know, so it's kind of the same. So, yeah.
Being in Toronto now, you haven't spent a lot of, you've probably spent more time as a visiting player in Toronto than you have, obviously, as part of the Raptors. But the city itself, a real diverse city. It's a lot like New York in a lot of ways, right? People from all over the world there. That's new for you in the NBA. That's got to be.
It's new.
It's not Oklahoma City. It's not Orlando.
Yeah, but you know, now after 7 years in OKC, living in Oklahoma, and now I'm used to that kind of life, Oklahoma. So me being in Toronto now, it's like it's not really like, you know. It's beautiful city, beautiful place, you know. But I'm just gonna be focused on my job, really, you know.
The timing of coming to Toronto, they made a move because they think you're the player that can help get them over the top against Cleveland. You played in pressure. There was not pressure basketball in Orlando this year. It was not a good team.
No, it was pressure.
There's no pressure, right?
No, it's a pressure.
It was pressure
for myself. It's pressure, yeah, because. With all the pieces they trade for me to be there, we was hoping to make playoff, and things go different way. That's pressure.
You got traded, and then they signed Bismack Biyombo, and I think a lot of people around the league said, "I don't understand how this is going to work with Vucevic. I'm not sure how this is going to work out."
Yeah.
Did you have those same questions of the league has changed and style of play, and teams are playing smaller? Did you just look and go, how do we all play together?
You know, at the moment, I didn't think about it. At the moment, I was exciting, and I didn't think about it. You know, exciting to have Bees, to play with Vooch. You know, just exciting, like, you know, well, maybe thinking, okay, we're going to manage a little bit to sometime to play small ball, stuff like that. You know, but like I say, the style changed now. You know, the style really changed. The game now, So the game is fast now, and you have center who shoot threes now. So the game just changed now.
When you arrived in Toronto, what were your conversations like with Masai, Dwayne Casey, Kyle Lowry, DeMar? What's the message from them about sort of where that team is and where they need you to help take them?
Listen, Masai is a professional. I'm a professional, so you know. The soon when I heard they do that deal on the table, they got me. I already know what they had to do. They already know why they need me. So it was not really a lot of time. It was not really a lot necessary to talk about because you know what time it is right now. It's not the beginning season. It's after All Star break. You know how time it is now. So I've been in this position before, and they know why they got me, and they know why they did it. So both sides we know what time it is right now. Right now it's about the business. You know, so, and, you know, we didn't really have to sit down to talk a lot because we already know what time it is right now. And, you know, it's clearly, even you, everybody know why they got me, and you know, what a team, you know, what a team need and why they got me. So it's clear.
When you look, you haven't, like I said, we talked earlier, like Kyle's out until maybe just before the playoffs or around then. But you know what kind of player he is. You've played against him.
Yes.
You've watched him a long time. When you look at the talent on this team, is there enough? You've been to the NBA Finals before. You've been to the Conference Finals several times.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this team good enough to achieve at that highest level?
Healthy, yes. Everybody healthy, yes. With the team that we have on now, yes. We got Tucker. It's a tough defender. He know bring us toughness, you know. And when the Kai come back, and with the guy we have, I believe yes.
Do you think about free agency?
No.
Isn't it human to think about the uncertainty?
Yes, you know. I try. Yeah. I always try to focus. Not think about it because, listen, like I say again, I'm gonna keep saying again. I'm a believer. You know, so I always think things, you know, I may be crazy, but I think things happen for a reason, you know. So I told myself, I'm not going to think about free agents right now. I'm just going to focus to do what I can do, what I can control. And then we see what happens, you know, we see what happens. So, and then, I try to focus on basketball, just the basketball now, just to play, you know, not think about the free agents. And then after the time comes, then we're going to see.
It's a big spring, big summer for you, Serge. I appreciate you taking the time, man. It was good to visit.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest, Toronto Raptors forward, Serge Ibaka. Be sure to listen and subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play. And you can hear us every weekday on the Vertical Podcast Network at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. Of course, I'd like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, SeatGeek and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.